Blog Talk Radio.
Chop, chop. Good evening. Come in if you dare. Welcome to Erie House, only tiny radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by...
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One and my sharpening axe. And we're here with...
Car Runch! Yo, Bat. It is I, Gar the Ghoul. Blah, blah, to you. Car Runch! Yo,
with
Bat.
With greenish skin.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Spike
nice Jones. Nice reference to Spike Jones there, Gar.
Yeah. Car Runch, yo, Bat. I don't know why that just ran through my head, but it did.
It's scary in there, I'm sure.
Wow. I wouldn't want to be alone in here. Okay.
Good thing you have all those multiple personalities to
Yes, I know.
You have somebody to talk to all the time.
The best multiple personality you can have if you have a multiple personality would probably be an accountant to keep track of everybody.
There you go.
Right? Well, that's not the right one. Here it is. There we go.
There we go. What's life without a Boeing? Hey, we're celebrating what? The 100 millionth anniversary? No, 119th anniversary,
no,
is it?
119th anniversary.
Of the Lizzie Borden murders. If you believe she did it. There's some doubt, historically, maybe. I don't know.
I think you could probably just take off the Lizzie and just call it the Borden murders, and you're right all the time.
Yes,
but
because the
when
victims
you attach the Lizzie on there, it's like,
And they were hacked.
For
an act.
Sure were.
40 or 41 times each.
So they say. Now, was there actually someone that counted the interjections on the bodies?
There had to have been an autopsy and an inquiry
and
on the
crime. There were like 9 or 10 or something like that. Yeah.
If you're sitting there and you're going, one, two, three, and you get up like 28 and you go, oh, crap, I got to start all over again.
Sometimes they try to see what is the actual cause of death. Was it severing an artery? Was it the crushing of a skull? You know, all those fun things.
Hacked up 44 times might do it.
Because then if you're trying to convict someone, you could say the first 30 were accidents, but that last one, you did that on purpose.
Accidentally.
Oh.
You're swinging 30, 40 times. No, whether it was 9 or 10 or whatever.
But it wasn't 30 or 40 times.
That was the children's rhyme that came later.
Yes.
Took an axe. Gave her mother 40 whacks when she saw what she had done.
It was her stepmother. She was given about 19 whacks, and her father got 10 or 11.
He was sleeping.
So maybe she got tired. Maybe she was not as ambidextrous as we thought. I don't know.
Expended all that energy.
Yeah. Fogsbane. Hey, Fogsbane.
Yes, who brings up a very important point. Dave has been nominated as a nominee, for the Horror Host Hall of Fame. Voting just ended, earlier this week?
It ended yesterday.
Yeah. So that's earlier this week, but not much earlier.
That would be. You are right. That would be earlier this week, yes.
And hopefully you'll hear good news, my man. You deserve it.
We'll see. Announcement. They're supposed to announce it on Monday, so we shall see what we shall see.
We will be keeping our ears open for that.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that they nominated. So we'll see. We'll see what we shall see. But
now, unusually, we have CBS Radio Mystery Theater tonight for one of our two features, and suspense for the other
on Saturday. Yes.
Yep, the First Lady of Suspense, Agnes Moorehead, is back for this particular episode. Both of them having to do with Lizzie Borden. And yes, that's why we're having the Mystery Theater tonight.
And oddly, this is crazy. Okay, so right before we clicked the on button, Dave and Dale and I were trying to remember names. After all this time,
your name is Gar.
Speaking of the made, I believe it was a made-for-television film starring Elizabeth Montgomery as Lizzie Borden. It happened like 1978 or something like that. And the wild thing is two different things. One is Elizabeth Montgomery actually had a cousin that's related to, or they are cousins once removed, to Lizzie Borden.
Identical cousins, but you'll find. Oh, I'm sorry.
So Elizabeth Montgomery was in some way, shape, or notion related to Lizzie Borden. Another goofy thing is we're going to hear tonight in, I believe, the suspense episode, Agnes Moorehead doing it. And so then you kind of are seeing this all come together in that Elizabeth Montgomery and Agnes Moorehead were together in the Bewitched series, but also they share common lineage with the Lizzie Borden doodad stuff.
Sure. And then why not start with suspense? Why not start there? It's called the Fall River Tragedy. Excuse me. Fall River Tragedy.
Okay.
Can't speak.
That was a tragedy. That was a tragedy, Dale.
I am.
Yeah.
I have been known to be a tragedy.
Oh, no. Okay. The Fall River Tragedy. Oh, my goodness.
Fall River is the name of the... I told you earlier today, Garb, Fall River is the name of the town.
Okay. That's it. Right. Fall in a river tragedy.
Remember?
Anytime you fall in a river, not good.
No. Falls River was the town where all this happened.
Yes. I had to go racing into the other room to find the data because I didn't print it out. I should have printed it out. I got a printer. But, yeah, so I'm ready when you guys are.
Indeed. Let's start with part one. This one is from...
January 14th, 1952.
Autolite and its 96,000 dealers bring you the First Lady of Suspense, Miss Agnes Moorehead, in a true story of murder. Tonight's presentation of Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents a dramatization of the most famous unsolved American murder mystery. Miss Agnes Moorehead as Lizzie Borden in The Fall River Tragedy. Hey, Hap, why the downcast look?
My battery is dry, Harlow, and my car won't start.
Well, Hap, that's one of the big reasons you should have an Autolite Stay Full battery, the famous battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use.
You mean...
Why, the Autolite Stay Full has over three times the liquid reserve of batteries without Stay Full features. And this helps prevent one of the major causes of battery failure. The Autolite Stay Full gives longer life, as proved by tests conducted according to accepted life cycle standards.
That's the battery for me, Harlow.
Well, then, see your neighborhood Autolite battery dealer. He's equipped to give you the best service money can buy on all makes of batteries. To quickly learn his location, just call Western Union by number...
And ask for me, Operator 25. I'll gladly tell you the address of your nearest Autolite battery dealer.
And remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, with The Fall River Tragedy and the performance of Miss Agnes Moorehead, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
Some tea from the pantry. You're Mr. Liffitt from the magazine?
Yes, I'm Elizabeth Borden. Won't you come in? Come on in.
I I thought we might sit in the morning room. I have all the things in there, the newspaper clippings and pictures about the trial. Yes, you may sit there, if you will.
Lizzie Gordon took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. Then she took another one and gave her father 41.
That child followed you here. They follow anybody who comes and shout their words. That has been part of my punishment. My whole life since the trial has been a punishment, the worst punishment that anyone innocent or guilty could ever face. They
Lizzie
think I'm
Gordon
guilty.
Took an axe and gave her mother
Everyone
40
does. They always did, but I'm not.
The
jury said I wasn't.
41.
You must forgive me. I'll pour you tea and tell you all about it. It was my father and my stepmother who were killed, if you'll remember. It was a long time ago. Father, where he lay on a couch in the living room, and my stepmother upstairs, where she'd been attending to the making of the beds. First, Dr. Bowen came over, and then in a little while, the police were there, too. After some time had passed, I was arrested and brought to trial. And all my friends were witnesses against me.
May it please your honor, Mr. Foreman and gentlemen of the jury. Upon the fourth day of August, an old man and an old woman, husband and wife, each without a known enemy in the whole world, in their own home, upon a frequented street in the most populous city of this county, under the light of day and in the midst of its activities, were first one, then another, severally killed by unlawful human agency. Today, Lizzie A. Borden, the own daughter of one of the victims, is at the bar of this court, accused by the grand jury of this county of these crimes. As spokesman for the Commonwealth, it is my purpose to explain to you the grounds and the basis for that accusation. I believe the best way to do that is to call the first witness, will Dr. S.W. Bowen take stand. Dr. S.W. Bowen?
Yes, thank
you. Place your hand on the book. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Please be seated.
Dr. Bowen. Where do you live?
At 91 2nd Street.
That is in Fall River?
Yes, in Fall River.
Am I right in believing that address is directly across 2nd Street from where the Borden family lives?
Yes, that is correct.
Do you know the Borden family?
Yes, I had been their physician and friend for 25 years.
Did you know Mr. Borden's financial situation?
Financial situation?
Did you know if he were wealthy or not?
Mr. Borden's estate, I do not hesitate to say, is considerably more than $300,000.
To be inherited by whom, do you know?
According to his will, to be inherited by his wife.
And upon the condition of her death?
To be inherited by his two daughters.
His two daughters, that is the prisoner, Miss Lizzie Borden and Miss Emma Borden.
Yes.
I see. On the morning of the 4th of August, where were you, Doctor?
I was working in the front garden.
How long had you been working there?
Between 9:30, if I can remember, and the time I was called to the Borden house.
Had you seen anyone enter the house?
Only Mr. Borden.
The deceased. What time was that?
Some minutes before 11, say 10 before.
Tell us what you noticed, please.
I saw him first coming up street. He turned through his gate, and then I heard him knocking on his door.
The door was locked?
Yes, I could see that he had tried to unlock it with his key, but the door must have been locked from the inside. Presently, he was let in by the maid, Bridget Sullivan.
Had you ever known that to happen before?
No.
And you saw no one else enter the house the morning of the 4th?
No.
Now, Dr. Bowen, how did you learn of the trouble?
The maid, Bridget Sullivan, told me. She came across and said Lizzie had found her father and had called her to go for help.
And you returned to the house with her?
Yes.
Who was there when you arrived?
We went in the side entrance, which led to the kitchen. Miss Lizzie Borden and a neighbor, Mrs. Churchill.
Do you remember what was said at that moment?
Oh, yes, I do. I saw Lizzie and I said, Lizzie, what's the matter? She said, Father has been killed or stabbed. I said, well, where is he? And she told me, in the sitting room.
Is that all she said in that conversation at that time?
Yes, I went into the sitting room.
Will you describe what you saw in the sitting room?
Mr. Borden was on the couch. He had the appearance of a man who had been killed while he slept.
Could you explain that, Dr. Bull?
There was no facial constriction such as is found in cases where the victim fought death.
Were there signs of a struggle in the room?
None.
And And when you went out, did you speak to Miss Lizzie Borden again?
Yes.
Do you remember what you said?
Yes, I asked her if she had seen anyone, and she said no. And then I said, where were you? And she said, in the barn, to get some lead.
Dr. Bowen, who discovered the body of Mrs. Borden?
I did.
When?
And I went upstairs to get a sheet to cover the body of Mr. Borden. I saw her body when I reached the top of the front stairs.
You could see her body from the stairway?
Yes.
Could you see it from the hallway upstairs?
Yes.
Did you examine the body?
Yes, she'd been killed the same way as Mr. Borden.
Do you know, sir, which of them died first?
I believe it has been proved by Dr. Wood that Mrs. Borden died approximately an hour before her husband did.
Thank you, Dr. Borden. That will be all.
Lawyer's name was Mr. Moody. Oh, he was just full of hate. And he had a way to fill everybody else with hate, with the questions he asked. He made all my friends witnesses against him. Yes, Miss Russell, who lived next door south, and Miss Churchill, who lived next door north. Mr. Moody made them say things to make the jury believe that no one could have gone into the house without being seen, and that no one had it. Yes? So the murders were committed by someone who was there. And Bridget Sullivan was the only other one there. But there wasn't anybody who suspected her. She was just a witness against me, like the rest of them.
Bridget Sullivan. How long have you known the prisoner?
I worked at that house for almost 3 years.
Would you say they were a happy family?
No, sir.
Will you explain what you mean, please?
There were feelings between Mrs. Borden and the two girls.
Miss Lizzie and Miss Emma?
Yes. Mrs. Borden was their stepmother. They didn't like her.
Well, did they show their dislike in any definite way?
Well, Miss Lizzie never called her mother. She always called her Mrs. Borden.
Do you know why she did that? Or what started the feeling?
Yes. There was an argument about some property. Mr. Borden gave some over to Mrs. Borden. Miss Lizzie thought his property should go to his own flesh and blood.
How do you know this happened?
I heard her arguing with her father.
Do you remember the words that were spoken?
They argued about the property, and Mr. Borden said, Mother has a right to it. And Miss Lizzie said, Don't call her mother. She's a mean old thing, and we hate her.
By we, she meant her sister and her.
Yes.
And from that time, Miss Lizzie never called Mrs. Borden mother.
Never that I heard.
Miss Sullivan, what were you doing the morning of the murder?
I've been washing windows.
Who was in the house that morning?
Miss Emma was not. She'd been gone since the day before visiting a friend. Mr. and Mrs. Borden had breakfast and then he left.
Well, what time was that?
Near 9 o'clock.
What about Mrs. Borden?
She was dusting. Told me to wash the windows. Then I never saw her again.
Will you repeat that, please?
I never saw her again. I even asked Miss Lizzie where she was, and she told me she went out.
Miss Lizzie told you her stepmother had gone out?
Yes. She said a note had come and that Mrs. Borden had gone to see a sick friend.
Did you see the note?
No, sir. No, never saw it.
Did you see Mrs. Borden leave?
No, sir.
If she had indeed left, which door would she have gone out?
The front door, sir.
And yet that was the door you unlocked and opened to admit Mr. Borden a few minutes before 11.
Yes.
How was it locked?
It was bolted from the inside.
Did you lock it?
No, sir.
And obviously no one going out that way could lock it from the outside.
No, sir.
What about the other doors?
They were locked.
You sure of that?
Yes, sir.
So, no one could have come into the house that morning.
I don't think so.
All right, Miss Sullivan. Now, when you heard Mr. Borden knock on the door, you went to it.
Yes, sir.
Miss Sullivan, where was Lizzie Borden at that moment?
Upstairs or on the stairway.
How do you know that's where she was?
Because when I was walking to the door, I heard her laugh.
You heard her laugh?
Yes, sir. And she came down the front stairs after I let her father in.
What was she laughing at?
I don't know, sir. She didn't say.
Tell us what happened then after Mr. Borden came in.
I heard her ask how he felt. He'd been sick. Then I heard her get the couch ready so he could lie down. By that time, I'd gone through the kitchen to the rear stairway where I went up to my room.
And how long did you stay there?
20 minutes, I think. Then Miss Lizzie called from downstairs to say that her father had been killed.
And did you speak to Miss Lizzie?
Yes, sir. When she told me her father was killed, I asked her where she was.
And how did she answer?
She said, I was up in the barn.
Oh, thank you, Miss Sullivan. That will be all.
This lawyer, this Mr. Mooney, was awfully clever. You understand, the Commonwealth had no physical evidence nor any witnesses to the murders. And Mr. Mooney was trying to eliminate the possibility that anyone else could have done it, as they said. And I realized that innocence or guilt didn't make any difference anymore. Mr. Mooney would have tried to do the same thing no matter what. To turn my friends against me, my doctor and my servant.
Captain Harrington, being in charge of the investigation of the day of the murders, did you question Miss Lizzie Borden?
I did. When I got there, I asked her if she knew anything about it. She said she did not, that she'd found him when she came into the house. I asked her where she'd been, and she said she'd been in the loft, in the barn. I asked her how long, and she said she thought it'd been 20 minutes.
And did you investigate that statement?
I did. I went to the loft in the barn. The floor was thick with dust. When I walked across it, I left footprints. But there were no other footprints up there.
There was no evidence that anyone else had been there?
No evidence at all.
That will be all, Captain Harrington. Thank you. I would like to ask the jury to pause for a moment and weigh the testimony heard thus far. I should like to remind you that it was given by persons who would rather not speak against the prisoner and who spoke only the truth under oath. Now, I should like to ask the prisoner, Miss Lizzie Borden, to take the stand.
Autolite is bringing you Miss Agnes Moorhead as Lizzie Borden, with Joseph Kearns as Mr. Moody in The Fall River Tragedy. Tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Say, Hap, where were we?
Oh, you were telling me about the Autolite Stay Full battery.
Oh, it's the famous battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use.
Good starter, Harlow?
It's the very best, Hap. Why, every positive plate in the Autolite Stay Full is protected by fiberglass retaining mats to reduce shedding and flaking and give longer life, as proved by tests conducted according to accepted life cycle standards.
You've sold me, Harlow. I'm on my way to get a new Autolite Stay Full battery.
So, friends, have your battery checked soon by your neighborhood Autolite battery dealer who services all makes of batteries. He'll gladly tell you whether your battery is right for these cold starting days. And if a replacement is needed, your Autolite battery dealer has an Autolite Stay Full battery for your car. To quickly learn his location, just call Western Union by number.
And ask for me, Operator 25. I'll tell you the name of your nearest Autolite battery dealer.
Where you can be sure of getting an Autolite Stay Full battery. The battery that needs water only three times a year in normal car use. And remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
I always liked Operator 25. I thought she was kind of hot.
Really? I ended up with Operator 27. She was definitely not hot. Yeah, definitely not.
You know. Some of them just, you know, they look better on radio.
Hey, you know, this was deemed as one of the many trials of the century. And it just basically means it gets such an extraordinary amount of press that it goes nationwide. And even in this time here, the 1800s, this one was considered, matter of fact, in this list of 25 of the trials of the century, this was listed as the very first one, the Lizzie Borden murder trial. Now, how many of these others have you guys heard of? The murder trial of Harry K. Thaw from 1906.
Well,
anybody?
No.
Anybody?
No.
Okay. Number three, assassination trial of Big Bill Haywood.
No.
No. Okay. Number four, Sacco and Vanzetti murder trial. I think we've all heard of that. We studied that in school to a degree.
Nix.
Okay. Number five, the manslaughter trial of Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle.
Yes.
Yes. I'm going to say, come on, you guys. I know you know that one.
Did he kill somebody?
Oh, there you are.
No. They don't have to be killed. They were just called trials. Actually, it was. I think he was up for murder because the one girl on the ship died. So I think he was up for murder.
Did he fall on her?
Yeah. No. Number six, Beulah Ann and Belva Gertner murder trials. Not for me. Number seven, Leopold and Loeb on trial for the perfect crime. Guess it wasn't so perfect. Have you really heard that one? Really?
Yeah, that is the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby, I believe. Leopold
that one's coming up, though. That one's coming up, though.
I know I've heard of it.
They were two well-to-do students at the University of Chicago, obsessed with the idea of committing the perfect crime. That's where they abducted a 14-year-old boy. There was an abduction, though. 14-year-old boy living in Chicago suburbs.
Creepy.
Then they murdered Franks in a car rented with a fake name and dumped his mutilated body near an Indiana border. Oh, what nice guys. Number
That's
eight, and we've all heard of this one, the Scopes monkey trial.
Yes.
Yes.
The monkey did it.
He did. Number nine, the Hall Mills double murder. I wasn't familiar with that one.
No.
Number 10, here you go, Dale, the Lindbergh kidnapping trial of Bruno Richard Hauptmann.
That's it. Hauptmann was the kidnapping trial of Lindbergh baby.
11, the Gloria Vanderbilt custody trial. And there was even a little poem from that. Rockabye baby up on a writ, Monday to Friday, Monday's unfit. As the weekends, she rises in virtue, Saturday, Sunday, mother won't hurt you. Okay. Number 12, something we're also all familiar with, the Nuremberg trials. When they held tribunals of 22 Nazi leaders
who said,
hey, they ordered me to do it. Number 13 was Julius and Ethel Rosenberg espionage trial in 1951.
I remember that.
Number 14, murder trial of Sam Shepard.
Yes, that was big when we were kids.
Yes, that was definitely a big
And it
Duke.
Wasn't far from
it really
the
was.
Northeast. Yeah, it was here in Northeast
fact,
Ohio.
Matter of fact, they did an 8-part series on it on the station that I just actually started airing last Sunday called Haunting Mysteries. It was based on a book written by Sam Shepard's son. Number 15, Adolf Eichmann's capture and retrial. I wasn't familiar with that one. Number 16, the trial of Chicago 7, depicted in the 2020 made-for-TV film, I think it was, the trial of Chicago 7. Number 17, we've heard of this one, the Manson family murder spree.
Oh, yeah.
Number 18, Ted Bundy's bizarre multiple murder trial.
Yes.
That
number
was 19,
bizarre.
The Lyle, yep. Number 19, the Lyle and Eric Mendez murder trial.
Yep.
Number 20, the trial of Pamela Smart, the married 22-year-old teacher who carried on an affair with a local teenager named Billy Flynn on May 1st of 1990. She came home to find her husband shot to death. And basically the guys that broke in were, I think, like students so she got convicted. Anyway, number 21, again, one that we're familiar with, Lorena and John Wayne Bobbitt dismemberment trial.
I'm not a member of this. I'm not a member of the member.
No, you're not a member. Neither was his.
I've been called one, but I have not.
Number 22, the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yeah.
Number 23, the Oklahoma City bombing trial. Number 24, President Bill Clinton's impeachment hearings. And number 25, the Casey Anthony murder case with the good old Kaylee Anthony, missing two-year-old Kaylee
horrible,
Anthony.
Horrible, horrible woman, yes.
Yeah.
Now, here's something crazy, okay, because you're listening to what was said, CBS Radio Mystery Theater script. All right. So from what's being told is this horrible thing happened. Doors were locked. The maid nor Lizzie Borden were the only other people in the house, heard nothing, right?
Yes, that's what they say.
If you go to the Manson tape, La Bianca murders, there was one person that survived, and it was the yard caretaker person that lived in his own little shack in the back. Didn't hear anything, and this was some horrific stuff that they perpetrated on those people. Didn't hear anything.
Yeah. Plus destroying the property, you'd think they would have made some noise. Jeez.
No, people were escaped from the dwelling and were found on the lawn in front. There had to be screaming, and the guy heard nothing. And the guy that visited him was found shot in the driveway because the guy was going to sell the guy in back a record player or something like that. But the guy in back heard nothing. Zero.
That's wild. That's weird.
And
have crime
Lizzie
photos
Borden.
Of the Lizzie Borden murders. Oh, gosh, they're graphic. Not good.
Yeah.
That was a violent, violent thing.
Frank? Yeah. Oh, yeah. They've been.
Oh, yeah.
If you go look it up, yeah, they're out there. But
if you're so inclined, I don't recommend it.
Yeah. You have to get kind of really into the to go look at murder shots. They're out there. The Boston Strangler has their murder pictures on.
Yeah,
no,
that's not good.
No. Depends on how disturbing you want to get, I guess. I don't.
Well,
let's
get a little less disturbing, but still thrilled nonetheless as we complete.
There you go.
The Fall River Travity from Suspense.
Suspense.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Miss Agnes Moorehead as Lizzie Borden in Elliot Lewis's production of The Fall River Tragedy, a true story, well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Remember the day so clearly when I was called to the stand. None of my friends would look at me, nor my sister. And then I realized that my father and my stepmother were more fortunate than I would ever be.
Do you, Lizzie A. Borden, swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, self regard?
I do.
Please be seated.
Miss Borden, did you ever have any trouble with your stepmother?
No.
Miss Borden, do you mean not within that past year?
No, about 2 years ago.
Well, then you did have trouble with her.
If you wish to call it that.
What was it about?
About my stepmother's stepsister, Miss Whitehead.
Was it a violent expression of feeling?
It was simply a difference of opinion.
In regard to what?
Property. Her father's house was for sale on 4th Street, and my father bought her stepsister's share and gave it to her.
To your mother?
My stepmother. We thought what he did for her, he should do for his own flesh and blood.
Did you at that time say to your father, don't call her mother, she's a mean old thing and we hate her?
I don't know. I may have, but I don't remember.
Were you always cordial with your stepmother?
That depends upon one's idea of cordiality.
Was it cordial according to your ideas of cordiality?
Yes. I didn't regard her as my mother. I stopped calling her mother after the affair regarding her stepsister.
Why did you leave off calling her mother?
because I wanted to.
Have you any other reason to give me?
No.
Then that will have to be sufficient. Now, Miss Borden, we come to the morning of August 4. That morning, did you breakfast with your father and stepmother?
No, I came downstairs at about 9. They had finished eating.
Did you see your father?
Yes. He was in the sitting room reading the Providence Journal.
And your stepmother?
Saw her in the dining room. She had a ducking cough.
That was about 9.
Yes.
When did you see your stepmother again?
After I'd eaten a pear and come back into the dining room. She told me she had had a note and was going out to see a sick friend. She said she'd get the dinner.
Did you see the note?
No, no, sir.
Did you see your stepmother leave?
No, sir.
Or did you hear her leave?
No, no, sir.
How long did you stay downstairs?
Oh, I'm not sure. I ate a pear and drank a cup of tea and then went back to my room.
Your room. That's up the front stairs to the rear.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
That is across the hallway and a few paces to the rear of the room where your stepmother's body was later found.
Yes.
How long did you stay in your room?
I don't know. It must have been an hour.
Did you see anyone up there?
No, sir.
Did you hear anything?
No, sir.
What were you doing?
I was sewing a piece of lace on a garment.
Do you know that medical examination has proved that your stepmother was killed approximately an hour before your father?
Yes.
Do you understand that to mean she was killed at approximately 10 o'clock?
Yes.
Were you in your room at 10 o'clock?
I think I was.
But you heard nothing. Nothing like the sound of a person being struck down a few paces away.
No.
That is extraordinary. Now, Miss Borden, you insist that you did not leave your room for close to an hour.
Yes.
Now, where was your father?
He had left. He went downtown after 9.
Do you understand that the front door and all the doors were locked from the inside when he returned a few minutes before 11?
Yes.
Did you lock it?
No, sir.
Do you understand that the witness, Miss Bridget Sullivan, testified that she did not lock it?
I heard her say that.
Well, then who locked it?
I don't know.
Did you hear your father try to get in?
Yes, sir.
Were you still in your room?
I was coming down.
You had passed the spare room and were on the stairs.
Yes.
Did you see anything?
If I looked in, I should have seen Miss Borden. I didn't look in. I didn't see anything.
What did you laugh at?
I did not laugh.
Did you hear a witness's sworn statement that you did laugh?
Yes. Must have been mistaken.
I see. Now, when your father came in through the door Bridget Sullivan had unlocked, you came downstairs.
Yes.
Did you speak with your father?
I asked him how he was feeling, and he said he thought he would lie down.
And that is when he went to the couch in the sitting room. Did you help him?
Yes. Yes, I went with him and covered him with a shawl.
And then what did you do?
I went up in the barn to get some lead.
What kind of lead?
For fishing sinkers. I was going to our farm in Marion, and I was going to fish while I was there.
When were you going fishing?
Monday.
The murders occurred on Thursday. You were going fishing on the next Monday?
Yes.
Miss Borden, why did you pick that particular time on Thursday to go to the loft in the barn to get sinkers?
I don't know. It occurred to me, so I went to the barn.
Did you pick the loft of the barn as a place to keep sinkers?
No. My father had once told me there was some lead up in the barn.
Do you know that search for fishing apparatus in your house has shown there was none there?
I had none there, but there was some at the farm.
Then did not that apparatus include sinkers?
No, there were no sinkers on the line.
How long had it been since you used the apparatus?
3 years.
And you remembered all those years that there were no sinkers?
Yes.
I see. How long do you think you were occupied in looking for sinkers in the loft?
About 15 or 20 minutes.
Did you do nothing besides look for sinkers in that 20 minutes?
Yes, sir. I ate some pears.
Would it take you all that time to eat a few pears?
I do not do things in a hurry.
Is that all you did?
No. I went over to the window and I opened it.
Why did you do that?
Because it was too hot.
I suppose that's the hottest place on the premises.
Yes.
Don't you think it would have been more comfortable if you'd waited until late afternoon to look for your sinkers rather than choose the hottest hour of an August morning?
Perhaps I would have.
I'm sure you would have. From the window, could you see the house?
Yes.
How many pears did you eat in that 20 minutes?
Three.
Could you, standing at that window, see anybody enter the kitchen or the side door?
No, sir.
I thought you said you could see the house.
Not after you pass the jog in the barn. It obstructs the view of that side of the house.
Miss Borden, have you heard a witness, Captain Harrington, a policeman trained to make accurate observations, testify that there was no evidence whatsoever that anyone had disturbed the dust on the floor of the barn loft? That no one had been there?
I heard him.
And you still insist that you were there for 20 minutes during which your father was killed?
Yes, sir.
Then how do you account for Captain Harrington's statement?
I don't know. I'm afraid that Captain Harrington must have been mistaken. I was up in the barn. Moody was terribly clever. He suggested a motive, two motives, the hate for my stepmother and the inheritance. He suggested the story of being in the barn was false. He suggested that the story of the note and my stepmother leaving was false. He suggested that I was guilty, but I'm not. Jury said I wasn't. They found me not guilty. They didn't find the axe, they didn't find blood stains or destroyed clothes or anything, just circumstance. But it doesn't seem to matter what the jury said. Nobody else thinks I'm innocent.
Lizzie Borden, come
That's
in.
Why they punish me. But I am innocent, no matter what people think. I stood trial and I am innocent. I swear I am. I swear
Lizzie
I am.
Lizzie Borden, took an axe and gave him
a... Will you stop that?
Lady,
stop
it. Father
she
Borden.
Was not my mother. Oh, you're leaving. Don't go. I haven't finished. I haven't shown you the pictures or the newspaper clippings. I saved them all to show somebody. Why are you leaving like this, Mr. Lippert? You haven't even finished your tea. I didn't finish telling you my...
Star, the first lady of suspense, Miss Agnes Moorehead. This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for Autolite, world's largest independent manufacturer of automotive electrical equipment. Autolite is proud to serve the greatest names in the industry. That's why during the early months of 1952, the Autolite family will join together in saluting the leading car manufacturers who use Autolite products. Our Autolite family is made up of the nearly 30,000 men and women in 28 great Autolite plants from coast to coast and in still other Autolite plants in many foreign countries. Our family also includes more than 18,000 people who have invested a portion of their savings in Autolite, as well as 96,000 Autolite distributors and dealers in the United States and thousands more in Canada and throughout the world. Our Autolite family will salute the Hudson Motor Car Company on the next Autolite Suspense television program. If you live in a television area, check the day and time of Suspense on television so that you'll be sure to see this show. And remember, be with us next week for another thrilling Autolite Suspense program on radio. Next week on Suspense, our star will be Mr. Richard Basehart, who will portray a man who found it necessary to commit the perfect crime, a tale we call The Perfectionist. In weeks to come, we shall also present Mr. Charles Boyer, Mr. J. Carroll Nash, and Mr. James Mason, all on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morawick and conducted by Lud Bluskin. The Fall River Tragedy was written for Suspense by Gil Dowd. In tonight's story, Joseph Kearns was heard as Mr. Moody. Featured in the cast were Peggy Weber, Herb Butterfield, Ralph Sedan, Will Wright, and Stuffy Singer.
Agnes Moorhead may currently be seen in the Wald Krasner RKO production, The Blue Veil.
And remember, next week on Suspense, Mr. Richard Basehart in The Perfectionist. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Richard Basehart in Voyage to the Bottom of the Barrel.
More fun in the barrel of submarines.
But as for this last tempting tale, Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Under no circumstances taunt an accused, yet acquitted, axe murderer with your pithy songs of ridicule. If they were more comedic in their script writing, at a certain point, Agnes Moorhead's character would have run out of the door and started chopping that little kid up with an axe. You know.
That would have proved her innocence. You know what's funny is in there, I find that interesting, their choice of words, how she said, I was found innocent. No, she wasn't found innocent. She was found not guilty. There's a difference between she
yes.
was acquitted, she was found not guilty. She was not found innocent.
Yep. And another twist on that tale coming up next from CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
And a rare Friday appearance by the Mystery Theater. And maybe a different kind of a look into it is if Lizzie didn't do it, who did? Speaking of that, I found online, and I'm going to share this with everybody, the link. CBS News has a program called 48 Hours Mystery, where they take like 48 hours to investigate something, then they go ahead and report on it. Usually on, I think, on either Friday or Saturday nights or something like that. Well, they did one on the Lizzie Borden trial, and not only did they look at it, but they kind of retried her with a bunch of lawyers and prosecutors and things like that. And I will not be a spoiler, mostly because I just found it late this afternoon, and I'm only about halfway through it myself, but I shall put that link right there in the chat. And
there you go.
That way people can take a look at that program. It's very interesting is the way it's said. And some people are saying, yeah, she did it. And some people said, you know what? I changed my mind. I don't think she did it. The fact is, I'm only halfway through it, and there's a lot to go yet. And they're actually just getting the trial started. So I'm interested to see and redoing the trial from all those years ago. And that's just another additional little bonus time here from Eerie House Radio.
Now, you know, there was a certain thing in that that previous suspense where it said no one heard anything and all the doors were locked inside.
There's one door that wasn't, the side door that wasn't necessarily found to be locked.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But I can explain my whereabouts.
Didn't mention it. Yeah. Now, I was going to say that one thing that would explain that was if the maid didn't lock all the doors and Lizzie didn't lock all the doors, could have been that before she got hacked up that the stepmother locked all the doors.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
Well, yeah.
I think they found out that the mother was quite cold, so I think the stepmother was killed first. And then...
Yeah. And they figured an hour difference, I think, until the old man was killed.
Not that she was cold and cruel. She was just cold, temperature-wise. Gotcha.
Yeah.
There's
some interesting things that if you know, after the Radio Mystery Theater, if they don't bring it out, that I'd like to talk about. But it is actually very interesting. There's a lot. I think there was a big jump to conclusion, and back then you didn't have as much. You certainly didn't have much forensics. I mean, the guy that said, "Well, I didn't see any footprints except my own," you know, and that was about as far as forensic medicine went back then.
Yeah.
It could have been a dusty night.
Look,
we don't know.
Didn't
you
know.
Yep,
yeah,
that's right. It was
a
dark and dusty night. Yes, yes.
Yeah, they could have had a dust storm. We don't know. Yeah.
We will know. We will never know.
We don't know. We'll never know.
But we do know. We got a whole lot of radio coming up. Three parts to A Second Look at Murder. So as Dave mentioned, that title suggests we're taking another look from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and the original broadcast date was
June 10th, 1981.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. There have been theories advanced as to whether, how, if, and if so, why, Lizzie Borden took that axe and, as the verse goes, gave her mother 40 whacks, and then when she saw what she had done, gave her father 41. Lizzie was acquitted, but the suspicion of her guilt remains. Until today, when we probe that classic mystery and take a second look at the murder of her parents.
Happy. I tell you, you have got to stop that running after that Matthew fella. You're a married woman. Think of our daughters, Lizzie and Emma, if you won't think of me. Stop that. Abby, stop it, I say. Stop laughing at me. I'll make you stop. You like it, don't you, me, being laughed at? Andrew Borden, his marriage is a joke. He can't keep his wife at home. I've done it now.
Our mystery drama, Second Look at Murder, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by James Agate Jr. and stars Roberta Maxwell. I shall return shortly with Act One.
Seattle, Washington. Boston, Massachusetts. Dallas, Texas. Wherever you live, your home needs protection against the elements. That's why you should use Olympic Overcoat, the house paint that's tested tough. Take on the weather. Overcoat was tested tough on homes like yours all across the country. Tested tough to protect your home season after season, year after year. Get Olympic Overcoat for your home. It's tested tough. Take on the weather.
Roger, copy. This is not an exercise.
Sunday on CBS Television, CBS News begins an unprecedented series. CBS reports the defense of the United States with a startling simulation of an American city under nuclear attack. Can we survive a nuclear war?
Anybody that was in a shelter would be dry roasted as in a crematorium.
Watch CBS reports the defense of the United States, Ground Zero, Sunday at 10, 9 Central and Mountain on CBS Television.
A railroad car clatters through Pennsylvania's coal fields almost a century ago. Its only passenger, a doctor named Matthew Shields, beginning a 16-year special assignment for the American Red Cross. In railroad yards, on sidings, and in the great terminals, Dr. Shields would convert his home on wheels into a classroom and teach first aid and occupational safety to industrial America. And all along the way, local physicians were enlisted as Red Cross volunteers to continue the teaching effort. When the car rolled to a stop for the last time, 2 million people had learned first aid. The effort was called a good beginning, but only a beginning. Today, as the Red Cross begins its second century, we're proud that America still looks to us for first aid training. Now we teach over 3 million people every year, and we still say it's only a beginning. Red Cross, ready for a new century.
Thank you.
listeners are always asking, where do you find your mystery dramas? To which we invariably reply, everywhere. From the forgotten past to the distant future. Today's tale, however, comes from a different source. A young reporter from a newspaper we'll call the Boston Courier promised that if we gave him 1 hour on Mystery Theater, he could solve that historical crime enigma, the case of Lizzie Borden. And so we took him up on it. Friends, here is Mr. John Howard.
Thank you. I grew up in Fall River, Massachusetts, so the Lizzie Borden murder case was pretty familiar. Lizzie was tried and acquitted of the murder of her stepmother and father right in our New Bedford County Courthouse back in the 1890s. Now, last fall, my girlfriend, Louisa, and I were hiking up by the Profile Rock in the woods outside of Fall River. Louisa! Duck! Get down on the ground, flat!
John, there's only someone hunting.
I don't feel like becoming a target.
You don't think we could get shot by some hunter?
Well, I sure do. We're neither of us wearing red, so if we move, that jerk with a rifle could mistake us for a deer. And we'll crawl back the way we came.
On all fours.
We're not standing up with that maniac around. Yes, on all fours with our tails between our legs. Louisa, are you hit?
No. Something very hard and sharp cut through my trouser leg. Look at that mark on my knee. It's going to be some bruise.
Louisa, down there by your foot, do you see what I see? That's what you scraped your knee on, this old hatchet.
Wouldn't you know it? Hundreds of square miles of virgin forest, and I have to walk into the one sharp axe.
What'd you say? No, I know what you said. You didn't say hatchet. You said axe.
Look at that rust. That's been lying there a long time.
It's been here a long, long time. Why'd you say axe, honey?
Well, probably because Fall River is so close, and Fall River makes me think of Lizzie Borden, who lived there. And Lizzie Borden makes me think of that rhyme. Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. And then when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
Mm-hmm, 41. Louisa, whoever killed Lizzie's mother and father didn't use an axe. They used a hatchet. They never found the murder weapon back in 1892. This could be it.
How can you prove it?
Take it to the police here. Fall River has a very good crime lab, and the man in charge is an old friend of mine, Sergeant McCauley. Of course, that hatchet was a slim start, but it was a beginning. Did I mention that I write feature stories for the Courier and Louisa edits our women's page? That's how we met at work. Well, now, if by any chance this was the long-lost murder weapon used in Andrew and Abby Borden's death, and I could prove it, and prove who used it, you see the way my mind was working? Me, John Howard, getting a Pulitzer, local reporter, cracks murder mystery after 90 years, discovers identity of murderer of Lizzie Borden's mother and father. Quote, "What I'm most grateful about," said John Howard today, "is that I have vindicated the reputation of my great-grandfather, Justice Earl Howard, who declared Miss Borden innocent." I'd like you to meet Louisa Cahill. She's on the Courier, too. This is Sergeant McCauley, whom I told you about. He runs this lab.
Welcome, Miss Cahill. John, I'm not sure we've come up with the results you were hoping for. Now, let me show you why. Follow me.
Anything at all would be helpful, Mac. We're starting from scratch.
You're starting from rust. Now, over here is where we examined that rusty old hatchet of yours. We put it through this spectrograph, and on the handle, we found minute traces of what may be type O human blood and another type not yet identified.
Now, Mac, I'm a fool. Even if you came up with both blood IDs, how could it be matched up with those of the victims?
Why not?
They're both long dead and buried.
Who are they?
Lizzie Borden's mother and father. We struck out, Louisa. I don't know what I was thinking of.
McCauley was sweet and tried to be helpful, but he had no idea what you were trying to prove. And you know something, John? Neither do I.
Well, even after Lizzie Borden was acquitted, still everyone thought she was guilty.
Why was that? Was she or wasn't she?
Well, she lived in a small house in this town, and presumably if her stepmother and father were bludgeoned to death, she would have heard something. But she said she heard nothing. There was only herself and an Irish maid in that house. The mother was killed first at 9 or 9:30, then the father an hour later. No clues, no murder weapon, no blood on any of Lizzie's clothes. Now do you see why I want to know more?
No, I don't. How does it concern you and why?
I have to prove that Lizzie Borden was innocent.
But why? After all these years, why?
I'd rather not say. Trust me, Louise, I'll tell you soon. But now you can help get me all the background so I can really have the facts.
I suppose I could shoot into Boston and check our morgue. The university library has a great collection of old newspapers. I've used them for fashions of the past. That's my best bet for the news coverage of those days. John, how long can you take on this story?
Yeah, I called the old man, told him I had a good feature idea, and I wouldn't be in the office till I nailed it down.
Did he give you the green light?
But no green paper. I can remain here in Fall River so long as I foot my own hotel and meal bills.
How chintzy. Did you tell him what he could do with his proposal?
Hey, I accepted it. So I'm booked into the Hamilton House.
Well, okay, I'll go now and get you the info you want.
If I wasn't crazy about you as a girl, I'd admire you as a reporter's leg man. So long.
John.
Hmm?
Was that a compliment?
Hello?
John?
Louisa, hey, you got back to me awful fast. Where are you?
Boston. I found something you might want to investigate right away, so I thought I'd call. In the trial, three witnesses testified that Lizzie Borden bought some prussic acid on August 3rd, the day before the murders.
Well, did it say where?
Right in Fall River.
Which drugstore?
Parsons, corner of Main and Maple.
Hey, I know that place. I used to get sodas there when I was a kid.
Good afternoon.
Hi. My name's John Howard. I used to live here in town. I'm a feature writer with the Boston Courier. I guess yours is the oldest drugstore in town.
The oldest in Massachusetts.
Hmm. Are you one of the Parsons family?
Well, Ed Parsons. Ed was also my father's name and my grandfather's. He had this drugstore right in the same spot, corner of Main and Maple.
Hmm. Well, I'm doing a story on the Lizzie Borden case, and...
Oh, I thought people had forgotten all about that by now.
Some of us can, some of us can't.
So?
In the Commonwealth's case against Lizzie, three witnesses swore that your great-grandfather sold her prussic acid the day before the murders.
If he did, there must have been good reason.
Is there any way of finding out?
Could be, could be. What time is it?
I make it 5 o'clock.
I tell you, I'll lock up and take you down to the cellar. I think we got some old records going back pretty far. 1870, 1890, who knows? They may tell us something. Well, what do you make of that, Mr. Howard?
It's pretty conclusive.
You can't get more conclusive than that, I'd say.
I don't think anybody's ever been through these old ledgers. Here it is in black and white, August 3rd, 1892, sold to Miss L. Borden, digitalis. No mention of prussic acid. Not anywhere in this 1892 ledger did your great-grandfather sell anybody prussic acid. He sold her digitalis.
Of course, that's poison, too.
I thought it was a drug to regulate the heart, and still is.
Well, I mean, taken in quantity, it could cause death. But as you say, probably it was a prescription from some person in a family who had a heart condition, I would imagine.
Ed Parsons, we have hit on something.
Is
this place really called the Pen and Ink?
Yeah, it's Fall River's tribute to the Newspaper Guild. Well, the food is good. The beer is cold. It's my favorite hangout. Now that we've ordered, what have you got for me?
This envelope is full of goodies for you, John. Copies of news stories during and after the trial. There were three judges, but the main one, you may not believe this, was Justice Earl Howard. Howard? Any relation?
It's a common name around here. What do these newspaper stories say?
Oh, there was a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking. Judges, lawyers, after Lizzie was acquitted, saying that the trial was a mockery, that the evidence offered by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts should have been enough to convict her, but that the misrulings by the court and an improper charge to the jury was the main reason Lizzie Borden got off.
The heat's not off the main judge yet.
Also, another violent death in this town a month after Lizzie's parents were murdered. I've got it in that envelope.
Well, how's that death connected with our case?
A man called Matthew Turner, an itinerant painter who used to go from house to house doing portraits and miniatures. He was found with his face down in the pond. Some said he was drunk and fell in. Others said there was more to it.
Meaning?
He'd done a miniature of Lizzie's stepmother. And the scuttlebutt was, after the trial, it was Lizzie who somehow found him drunk, hit him, and pushed him into the pond.
Any motive?
Jealousy, I guess.
Oh, that poor lady. She's accused of almost every murder in Massachusetts. Now, how was his death connected with Lizzie?
He had a woman's handkerchief tied round his neck with the initials A.B. Abby Borden, the murdered stepmother.
Oh, Pete. God, Louisa, I love you. That is great investigative reporting.
John, just now you said the heat is not off that judge yet. What did you mean?
I did promise to tell you, didn't I? The main judge, Earl Howard, he was my great-grandfather. After Lizzie was acquitted, he was hounded to an early grave by countless people who believed her guilty. He had to move from town. No matter where he went, he suffered disgrace and ostracism. That's why when you found that hatchet, I decided I had to prove he was right, that Lizzie Borden was innocent.
Many knowledgeable, prejudiced, and even impartial souls have argued Lizzie Borden's guilt or innocence. Except for an Irish maid whose complicity was never questioned, Lizzie was alone in the house when the killings took place. Her only defense was denials. Someone else must have entered and murdered. Now we may have still another theory given us by a guest of the Mystery Theater, one John Howard, who will tell us more when we return with Act Two.
Rock-a-bye, baby.
I'm going to have a baby. Oh, doctor, thank you.
So many women idolize him. The doctor whose cure for infertility seems miraculous. Though lately, some women leave his clinic frightened. And some never leave at all. The Cradle Will Fall. Nerve-shattering suspense by Mary Higgins Clark, author of Where Are the Children? Plunging you into a terrifying medical conspiracy and every woman's most intimate fear. The Cradle Will Fall, a new Dell paperback bestseller.
Here at Fire Station Number 3, between fighting fires, we play a lot of checkers and drink a lot of coffee. So our coffee's Cava Instant.
Your move, Hogan.
Full-flavored Cava's the only 90% acid-neutralized coffee. And with less acidity, no matter how much we drink, we still feel good.
Ooh, nice move, Hogan.
In fact, we drink enough Cava to put out a fire.
Uh-oh, I think I'm in trouble. Saved by the bell.
Cava, all the taste you want in coffee without all the acidity.
A little bit of coffee wouldn't do bad around here.
A little bit of didn't you have enough earlier this week, Dale? Woo-hoo! Or were you done when you threw it on yourself?
Yeah, I wanted to drink some now instead of wearing
it.
Oh,
you want to drink some?
Yeah. I look like the Michelin man. on one side. But it is what it is. We've got that classic murder story, and now they're casting some doubt as to whether Lizzie dude it or didn't dude it.
Yeah, you're bringing up other people's names. You know, that's sometimes what happens in all murder cases. I mean, the first thing they look at when a spouse is murdered is the other spouse. And then, you know, then they just narrow it in. Sometimes they never even look anywhere else.
True. You know, I think it's human nature for police to have hunches. And I would assume that sometimes those hunches are wrong.
Yes, sometimes they are. And sometimes they know people well enough that their hunches may be right. But you have to prove those hunches. You can't just,
well
I know you did it.
Yeah, that's what the courts are for. To prove it.
Unless you're
prove
Columbo.
That's right. Columbo will prove it all.
That's right. I just need to ask you one more question.
Yeah, I know. That's one show where he bugged them so much they finally broke confessed. That's the only way he could actually get the conviction. Because he broke them down and confessed. If they saw him one more time, they'd either kill him too or whatever, you know.
Yeah, they didn't know. He didn't know him
but
to confess.
Yeah, it would almost be a comedy if they got Peter Falk to do a Lizzie Borden episode. It would just, I don't know. I think
that'd be funny.
Come off
I'd like
as,
to see that.
More as parody. Would,
yeah. Columbo gets conked in the head and wakes up back then, and it's just one more thing.
Just got one more thing to ask you.
One more thing, Miss Borden. Oh my!
But interesting take on this Lizzie Borden story that we had not really heard or considered before. So
why not?
So one of the things is the Dixie Dance about she's not innocent, but she's not found guilty, and that's just a pratfall of the legal system, right?
I think that's like the sensationalism of the press. You have to imagine that whatever press was available, or media, if you will, just blew that story out of the water. I mean,
right?
You know what I mean? It was the biggest
CNN.
Thing of the day.
But they didn't have CNN.
They did not.
Yeah, I'm sure they had something comparable, and that's nothing new under the sun.
No, they had what would. They had Smoke Signal Network.
There you go.
I don't know.
Smoke Signal Network.
Well, newspapers still had a newswire service, and this story is one that was kind of followed throughout the country. And on that, one thing I did notice on that CBS 48 Hours mystery that I put the link on to there, put it in again. I'll put it in again towards the end of the program.
Yeah.
But they did show a lot of articles. You know, actual newspaper articles saying, you know, well, finally she's been arrested and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it was just not followed right there in the Boston area. It was followed throughout the country.
Yeah, that was
the
national news.
Wire.
Definitely.
Even the thing with the news wires, because even then, the news wires weren't, they had a wire office, a building, a central place where all the wires were coming in.
Yeah, very long.
But they didn't have...
Yeah.
It wasn't networked into every newspaper had a wire service like Kolchak or whatever. They didn't have the tick, 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 you know, that whole. So you have to get somebody at the newspaper to constantly, about every 20 minutes, run to the Western Grammo store thing there and go, is there anything? And then race back, and then they have to read it. Then they have to put it into type because they were hand typing that stuff and then get it to print. And then they sent him back over, and by the time it hit press, they had to reprint it.
So, yeah,
it was a lot of trouble.
Well,
but
see, there was actually, believe it or not, fax machines were around before the telephone, because they used the wire like the telegraph, but they didn't have a standard. They were basically a point-to-point communication. You could talk to one place. Through that, or send your message through that one place, and it wasn't until the 70s when the United Nations made a standardized format for faxes that they could all talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it could be that some things did have a newswire, something like that, but it was basically a point to point from one office of a particular type of paper to another office in another city.
Yep.
And did newspapers print once a week yet?
No, but
they might have only been printing once a week.
It depends on the it depends on the newspaper, but there were still a heck of a lot of dailies. There were, you know, at one point there were like at least two dailies right here in Little Old Akron that came out. And when I lived in Buffalo, there was a morning and an afternoon paper, and the afternoon being the Buffalo Evening News in Cleveland, we had at least two because we had the Press and the Plain Dealer, and there was another one before that. Actually, there were a lot of papers before that.
But when did this occur? This was in 1915 or something like that? Or?
No, this is in the 18-something.
They might not have had a paper every – they might not have had two dailies back then in the 18-whatevers, you know?
Yeah, might not have.
Yeah, you have to – taking a big, huge time machine to get back there. And lack of technology.
A lot of them, you know, the newspapers just kind of combined along the way in a sense that, you know, that's what the Akron Beacon Journal, it was the Akron Beacon and the Akron Daily Journal, and they combined to become the Akron Beacon Journal. And it was the Plain Dealer, and they basically bought out the Cleveland Press subscription people and therefore closed it down, and it would just it remained the Plain Dealer.
Actually, it's the 129th. It's actually the 129th anniversary of the murders. They were in 1892.
Right. So these papers might have only might not have had a daily. They might have been a twice a month. You know, once every 2 weeks or something. Depends on where you were, but
well, right.
Definitely
but then,
not as.
A lot of your cities had daily newspapers yet. I don't know what the heck they would put in them, but why, you know, back then they would take short stories and serialize them, like Sherlock Holmes stories and things like that.
Yeah.
They're serialized and put into newspapers, and so they added fiction to there, and they didn't really have comics back then, so maybe the fiction was kind of took place of what the comics are that we have today.
But if you look at the 1890s and say the 1930s and 40s. Day and night, stuff was happening in the 30s and 40s, paper information moving. And then you look at that and move forward to today, and it's like crazy. We've actually seen a reduction in newspaper printing in the last 20 years.
Yes, a lot of papers have gone under or gone to weeklies. So we had one here in I think it was Stowe, that was either Stowe or Hudson, that was a bi-weekly, and they went down to just a weekly. So,
gosh,
yeah,
we got
a lot of
radio.
We do.
But we'll talk more about newspapers and Lizzie Borden after this.
Can't you see the difference between the letters B and D? He won't stop talking for 5 minutes. Why won't she behave at school? He won't sit still. My child tries so hard, why can't he learn? He can't distinguish his right hand from his left. Why can't she remember how to tie her shoes? He's impossible to live with. This is Pat Collins for the Foundation for Children with Learning Disabilities. These frequent complaints of parents can actually be symptoms of a child with learning disability. Problems in language and math, lack of coordination, disorganization, and hyperactivity are just a few indications of this problem. The keys to helping a child with a learning disability are early detection and special teaching. For further information on recognizing learning disabilities and to receive a free copy of Their World, a publication of FCLD, write LD, Box 2929, Grand Central Station, New York, 10163.
The Mystery Theater are not adding more fuel to the burning suspicion that the famed Lizzie Borden was truly guilty of chopping up her parents, nor are we throwing cold water on past pros and cons. Rather, with the help of reporter John Howard, we are taking a second look at a murder so that a judge's reputation will not also die. John Howard continues his investigation.
I sat down in my hotel room the following day and began to write the story as I saw it and as I thought it made sense to me. I began with life in the Borden household one morning in the cellar where Lizzie's father, Andrew, was sharpening an axe.
I was wondering where you were, Father. You shouldn't be down here in this damp cellar.
Lizzie, I'll quit just as soon as I've got a good edge on this blade. And a hatchet lying over there.
Father, will you look at you? You're perspiring all over, and it's cold down here. That's not taking care of yourself, as you promised Dr. Sam.
That's done. Lizzie, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me. Would you go upstairs and ask Abby to fix me a cup of tea?
She's not at home.
She's not at home. Hand me that hatchet.
Father, you have a bad heart. Now, you're supposed to stay quiet and not exert yourself.
Daughter, my body gives me no trouble. It's my mind that's in pain.
Oh, Father.
There's nothing you can do, little girl. Nothing. There's nothing I can do either. What a strange world it is. Here I sit in the cellar of my own house, weeping to my own daughter. It's my own fault. I never should have remarried.
Never married, Abby?
Oh, never. I hardly knew her. But you and Emma, you were such little things. Your mother being dead, how could I take care of you? So when I met Abby, I thought, here's a lady who'll be a mother to my two girls.
She was never really a mother. I'm not saying it's her fault.
No. Motherhood never interested Abby. The things that do interest her, the way Abby carries on with any man who happens to be... I mean that painter who came to do a miniature of her, that Matthew Turner.
Well, I don't believe that. Him? Why, he's disgusting.
I shouldn't have said anything. I think I'd better get myself upstairs. I'm not feeling too well.
I'll bring you your medicine, and you lie down.
You're a good girl, Liz. You're going to make some lucky man a happy husband.
I'll never marry, Father. I'll take care of you for the rest of my life.
That's the way I began my version of what life must have been like in the Borden home.
Who is it?
It's me, Louisa.
Well, come in.
May I sit?
You bet. Sit, stay, help me.
Is it moving, the story?
Gathering speed with every page.
You remember Matthew Turner, the miniaturist?
Oh, yeah. I'm just using him as a key to this. I think he was.
I've got more on him than his mysterious death. I'll read it to you. The Boston Record, September 10th, 1892. Quote, "The deceased called himself Matthew Turner. It was an alias disguising the fact he was related to a prominent Massachusetts family living in Fall River. Is it the fault of parents the children come to no good end?" Unquote.
That means somebody in this town knew who Turner really was and was kept quiet. Hey, that'll fit into what I'm writing. Darn good stuff, Louisa. Hey, did it ever occur to you to marry a newspaper man?
I wouldn't dream of it. It'd be work, work, work all the time.
It was almost as though there were two families in the Fall River home living under the same roof. A father and his daughters, and a stepmother, who by today's standards wouldn't have raised an eyebrow. But in 1892...
Abby! Abby, it's me, Andrew.
She's locked herself in her room, Father. Sometimes I hear her crying. It's been 2 days.
She'll get over it. She always does. Then there'll be someone else.
All of this isn't doing your heart any good.
I worry so about you.
Worry does no good. You keep getting Dr. Sand's prescription filled, and I'll keep taking it, as he says.
Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night, and I'm all overcome with anger at how you're being treated by her.
Ah, now, my little Elizabeth, you just remember what was engraved on the king's ring when he asked the wise men for a message to be looked at in good times and bad. And they came up with one short sentence.
Mm-hmm. What was it?
And this, too, shall pass. So, take comfort from that, Liz. Life will be better for us both soon. I'm sure of it. But life in the Borden household did not improve. One day, Lizzie took an excursion to Boston to see a play. She loved the theater. It was the 2nd of August. She arrived home at about 7 o'clock. The house was dark.
Father? Abby? Bridget, is there anyone home?
Oh, Father. Oh, what is it? You've got to get up from there.
Liz,
can you stand up, Father? What were you doing lying on the floor? Come on now. Slowly. We'll get you over to the sofa.
All right, Liz.
Let me light the lamp.
What time is it?
Where's Abby? Where's the maid?
Bridget, it's a day off. How is the play in Boston?
I'm not answering any questions until you tell me what this is all about. How long have you been lying there?
I don't know exactly.
You had an attack, didn't you? Why didn't you take your digitalis?
Oh, I've run out.
Oh, it's my fault. I should have looked at the bottle to make sure there was enough. There's none left?
A few drops, maybe. It could last me till tomorrow.
I suppose Abby hasn't been anywhere near you all day.
Yes, she has. Oh, my, yes. That's Matthew Turner, the nerve to show up. I ran out and stopped him at the gate, and I told him if he ever showed his face around here anymore, I'd kill him.
There'll be no more of this. You are going up to bed. I'll help you. Tomorrow I'll go to talk to Dr. Sands. You aren't getting any better.
No, I wish you wouldn't fuss so.
Father, you're the only person who means anything to me at all. Don't you worry. I'll have Mr. Parsons make up your new medicine in double quick time.
Good morning, Miss Lisbeth.
Mr. Parsons, I always like coming to your store. You're the only one who calls me by my rightful name instead of that hateful Lizzie, which I loathe so.
Whoops, I almost forgot my other customers. Excuse me. I've got 3 of the town's worst tattlers back there, and they can't make up their minds what kind of complexion powder or cold cream to buy.
You go right ahead. I have a few minutes.
Well, ladies, have you made up your minds? No? Well, look, I have a prescription to make up for Miss Borden, if you don't mind. You just take your time. There. Still debating the merits of various creams and powders, so we'll take care of you first. Oh, I see Dr. Sands' familiar, illegible hand.
He gave me this prescription because Father seems to be getting more dizzy spells and pains in the chest.
I'm sure we can take care of it.
May I watch?
Oh, of course you can. Come back here with me. Now, this is the marble table where I fill the prescriptions. Now, to work. Are those biddies watching us?
Yes, they are.
I'll give them an earful.
I wouldn't. They don't look like they have a sense of humor.
Yes, ladies, by all means you may watch. But I advise you to keep your distance. I am about to concoct a virulent poison, and I wouldn't want any of you to become contaminated. I'll give them some to mull over.
Mr. Parsons, they'll take you seriously.
Anything I cannot abide is a nosy, gossipy female. And three of them is just three too many. Now, let's see what Duck Sands has ordered. Yes. It's considerably stronger than the last one. You'll have to be careful with it.
Is it dangerous?
Digitalis can be a poison, yes. Now I place these leaves into the mortar and grind them up. Yes. An excess of digitalis could cause certain changes in heart rhythm, and we wouldn't want that. But in the right amount, it's exactly the stimulant your father needs. Now, when this is a fine powder, I steep the digitalis in alcohol and make up a tincture. Can you come back tomorrow morning?
Oh, I was hoping to take it with me right now.
Well, I could give you enough for three doses, say in powder form, that do you until tomorrow. Give him a third of a teaspoon each time in his tea or broth. Is he worse?
I think he is.
Has he been under a strain lately?
Very much so. A great deal of strain.
That ought to do it. Fine as talc. I'll give you enough for three light doses now, and you stop by in the morning. I'll have it all made up. Here you are, Miss Elizabeth. There's enough prussic acid in this little bottle to kill every rat within 50 miles. I'll place it on your account. See you tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Good day.
Now, ladies, is there anything else in the cosmetic line that perhaps I can show you?
I'm not saying that is exactly the way it happened, but it certainly could have been. Those three witnesses who swore Lizzie Borden bought prussic acid the day before her father and stepmother were struck down, those three could have been victims of a druggist's prank. The following day, there was no more laughter. At 9 o'clock, Lizzie Borden was in her own house when the first of two murders was committed.
It was the state's contention that only Lizzie Borden could have killed her parents. Our reporter friend, John Howard, contends differently. You may remember he began this investigation to clear the reputation of his great-grandfather, the presiding judge at the trial. When I returned with Act Three, we may learn whether John was glad or sorry he had reopened the case.
What do doctors recommend to avoid constipation? These days, doctors stress the importance of fiber in the diet. Food fiber that helps the system regulate itself naturally. Metamucil is a laxative made from natural fiber. No chemical stimulants. So for occasional constipation, doctors recommend Metamucil more often than any other laxative. The way to overcome constipation is the natural way. But if not nature, Metamucil. Read label and follow directions.
Hi. Pat Summerall to say that there are times you may want dim lights and soft music, but not when you turn on your flashlight or portable radio. That's why you should depend on Rayovac heavy-duty supercells from True Value Hardware Stores. Long-lasting Rayovac cells come in a variety of sizes for everything from calculators to electronic games. So restore full power to dim flashlights, faint radios, and slow tape recorders. Get Rayovac heavy-duty supercells from participating True Value Hardware Stores and Home Centers.
There you go, and get your Metamucil now. Eat it by the spoonful. Remember when they used to sell brand...
When they used to sell what?
When they used to sell brand flakes?
Oh, yeah. I think you still do.
They used to
sell raisin bran by saying two scoops of raisins in each box or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's funny. No matter what size box you got, they only put two scoops in there.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Maybe they use different size scoops. Could be.
Yeah. It's like a little coffee scoop.
So one person that gets off scot-free in every one of these tellings is the maid who was present, who didn't hear a thing. And,
That's curious. That's very curious.
She didn't hear anything, but she was a witness for the state. Really?
Yeah.
Yet she witnessed nothing. She didn't see anyone get chopped up. She didn't hear anyone screaming, blood-curdling screams. You could at least get off one scream, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, no.
Yeah, especially when you're shocked that many times.
She would have heard at least what? Two screams? Two. At least.
That's right.
One from each victim, right? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Lizzie heard nothing. The maid heard nothing. There are a lot of different directions that a lot of...
It was an inside job.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, like one of you noted that the side door was open. Okay, so that's where they could have come and gone from the side door.
True. Very quietly.
Very quiet. Well, he could have had a muzzler or a muffler on that axe. You never know.
A muffler. A silencer.
Yeah. A silencer on your axe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could have had a pillow around it. We don't know.
There you go. A pillow.
Yeah, if you had a pillow around it, then you wouldn't hear it, and then
you
it would take that in the 40.
It.
Then it would take 40 whacks to kill somebody.
It would have exactly, There are a lot of very soft dents on this body. We don't know what was going on, but
yeah,
maybe
but
it was
you'd
an
have
axe
to
and
assume,
a pillow.
You'd have to assume with the violent nature of it, of this particular crime. There had to be some hate going on or some something extremely emotional by the perpetrator.
It was a very passionate killing.
Yes.
Or,
which is why I'm reserving my comments for after this mystery theater in case they go ahead and give what they think may have happened. I'm going to throw my own two cents in if they don't.
Well, let's say it's not emotionally fused. Let's say it's just some person, some guy that just has some type of repetitive behavior disorder going on. You know, he's not angry. He just can't stop not doing it the next time. You know,
chop the wood, George.
Gotta chop the wood. Chopping the wood. Chop, 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 chop. You don't know. I don't know.
Chopping the wood. Chopping the wood.
You chop the wood, George.
Shake a leg, boss. Shaking the bush.
It could have just been a repetitive disorder, you know. I'm not angry. I just can't stop stabbing people. You know, it could happen.
Yeah.
Now, Dave, I hope you're writing notes because this is how you get out of being this is how you get acquitted from any type of weird things you end up in. Your Honor.
I end up in a lot of weird things. Yeah.
It's funny how you made sure we got that advice.
Yeah. Well, you know.
We need that advice.
Are we a bit experienced in that department ourselves?
I don't know. We are eerie.
And it's about to get eerier as we conclude.
We're eerie house for a reason, damn it.
That's right. Here we go with, hey, Linda Lou, welcome. Welcome, welcome. Joining Fogsbane and, Rob was here. Rob Smith is gone, but he'll be back.
Yeah, he left. Well, we don't know.
Let's get our third look at a second look at murder from CBS.
Person to person, heart to heart, together we can move the world if we do our part by helping care for the children, to nourish and to heal those in need, care for the children of the world, if we each help one needy child today through care, we'll change tomorrow.
Check or money order to CARE, Box 576, New York 10156, or local care office. Was the Lizzie Borden murder a classic case of justice or its miscarriage? New evidence intrigues John Howard. A hatchet with the initials AB carved into the age-encrusted handle, possibly belonging to Andrew Borden, and possibly the actual murder weapon. A drowned man who traveled New England, and a father with a heart ailment. All of which brings us to the murder morning. August the 4th, 1892. A hot August day that promised to be a scorcher. At about 9 o'clock, Andrew Borden was upstairs with his wife. We don't know to this day how much Lizzie overheard.
Abby, I tell you, you've got to stop it. This running after that man, Matthew. Now, you're a married woman. Think of our daughters, Lizzie and Emma, if you won't think of me. Stop that. Stop it, I say. Stop that laughter. I'll make you stop. You'd like me to be laughed at. A public disgrace. Andrew Borden and his marriage is a joke. Can't keep his wife at home. Laugh now, Abby.
And so it was that Andrew Borden, who with his own hatchet gave his second wife, Abby, the 40 whacks. Not his daughter, Lizzie. For her part, downstairs, Lizzie was not certain what she'd heard. And it wasn't until her father, white-faced, gasping for breath, slowly came into the living room that she began to suspect.
Father, what is it?
Nothing. Nothing. I'm so dizzy. It feels like there's an elephant on my chest.
Now, lie down. Let me undo your jacket.
No. Don't touch anything.
Why are you holding it together like that? Have you got something underneath it?
No. It feels better with my arms closed like this. Liz, the prescription.
We used the last of it last night, but Mr. Parsons said he'd have the rest of it ready today. I'll go over to the drugstore right now. It'll be all ready. He said so. Now, don't move. Please, Father, lie right there on the sofa. I won't be long.
Who is it? That's you, Liz? I've got to sit up. See who... the hatchet fell out of my coat. I've got to hide it. Who is that? Who ran upstairs just now? Liz? Is that you? They've seen Abby. Someone up there. You. What are you looking at me like that for? Say something. It's your fault, too. Give me that hatchet. Give it back to me. No! Elizabeth, I can't begin to tell you what anguish I feel that you should suffer this double tragedy.
It was so kind of you, Mr. Parsons, to come over to the house tonight. I must talk to someone. My sister wrote and said she'd never come back to Fall River. Bridget, the maid, went back to Ireland. Everyone acts as though I was the one who killed my stepmother and father. I didn't kill him. How could they think of such a thing?
People say anything. Mustn't pay any attention.
It's the police. They found some burnt cloth in the furnace, and they're saying it's the dress I was wearing.
There's going to be a trial soon, you know that.
Yes, I'm prepared for it.
Questions going to be asked, evidence presented, accusations made. And what will you say?
What will I say to what?
Those bits of cloth in the furnace, for instance. The police also found a hatchet with a broken handle in the basement, covered with ashes as though someone had tried to rub the blood away.
How do they know that was what killed them both? All I can say, and I will say it, is that I didn't do it.
Elizabeth, it was no secret. The whole town knows about your stepmother and her carryings on, and that neither you nor Emma liked her very much.
I told you, Mr. Parsons, I loathed her, but I didn't kill her.
Now, it's also rumored you were afraid you'd be disinherited in favor of your stepmother, and that could be a motive.
Oh, if only they knew how pathetically untrue all that is. I was very close to my father. He told me things in confidence which I shall never reveal. As for disinheriting his daughters in favor of that woman, it's ridiculous.
Could you prove that to a jury?
I will do nothing to soil my father's memory.
Even if your own life is in jeopardy?
Mr. Parsons, I don't care what the judge or the jury will believe. You and I will never talk about this again.
I'll pray for you, Elizabeth, because I know you're completely innocent. I would say you're the unfortunate victim of circumstances. I hope the Lord will know that and watch over you.
Well, that's my story, Louisa. Now that you've read it, what do you think?
You make a very good case for Lizzie.
As it turns out, she was acquitted anyway, but I think for the wrong reasons. My great-grandfather, Judge Earl Howard, believed she couldn't have committed those brutal, ugly crimes because she was too much of a lady. My theory is, if he'd known that Andrew, in a fit of frustration and uncontrolled anger, had killed his wife, Abby, the suspicion that hangs over Lizzie Borden to this day would never have started.
Probably not.
I would have liked to have written something from inside Lizzie's mind. What she might have thought just before the verdict, when she didn't know what it would be, innocent or guilty.
Can I try?
Would you?
What can I do? I have no choice. I burned the dress that was stained with Father's blood, because I couldn't bear to remember those minutes when I found him. And this was held up as proof of my guilt. I hated Abby, and this too was offered as proof of my guilt. Three witnesses swore upon the Bible I had bought prussic acid to kill my parents, in spite of Mr. Parsons' denial. Mr. Parsons admitted he was very fond of me, so his denial was deemed worthless. Father, I heard you accusing Abby of being faceless. I heard the muffled, strange sounds, and your threats, and your cries. But I never knew until I saw your white face, and its look told me. I could see the hatchet you were hiding under your jacket. I ran to the drugstore for your medicine. Dearest Father, I never even kissed you goodbye.
Louisa, I don't know what to say, but I'm going to use it word for word at the end of my story.
It's got no ending.
Oh, that's as far as I go. Maybe one day I'll do a more in-depth story, but complete or incomplete, this is what I'm taking to the courier.
Today?
Right now. Hey, why don't you plan to stay here at the Hamilton House over the weekend? I'll be back in the morning, and we can backpack. You know, that hike we started but never finished.
That would be great. Hello?
Is this Miss Cahill? Louisa Cahill?
Yes, it is. Who's this?
Sergeant McCauley down at the crime lab. I've been trying to reach John Howard, but I get no answer from his room. The operator suggested I ring you.
Oh, John drove to Boston to deliver a feature story he's been working on, the Lizzie Borden thing.
Oh, I see. I was just thinking, you're a very good friend of his, aren't you?
Yes, very good.
I think it might be better if I spoke to you instead of to him. But I'd rather not say anything on the phone. Do you think you could come down to the crime lab? I won't keep you but half an hour.
Miss Cahill, why was John so interested in the case?
His great-grandfather was the presiding judge. When he voted acquittal and Lizzie got off, his life became a misery. At best, people thought the judge a fool. At worst, a criminal.
So he wanted to clear the judge's name by proving Lizzie Borden was really innocent.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes what I'm going to tell you even tougher. We kept running that hatchet through the spectroscope, analyzing and reanalyzing every inch. And then on a hunch, I had the blade taken off the handle. And there, in the tiniest miniature handwriting you ever saw, was a signature.
Matthew Turner.
How did you know? Have you known all along?
I suspected it. He must have been very peculiar. To sign a murder weapon as if it had been a work of art. But of course, that's it.
What is?
He regarded the death of Andrew Borden as his work of art.
Miss Cahill, there's one thing I haven't told you. You know, when you start investigating, you don't know where it'll lead you. Matthew Turner was the son of Judge Earl Howard, which could mean he was John's great uncle. Now, how can I tell that to him? I've known him since he was a boy in this town.
If that isn't ironic. As you say, when you start investigating, here's John trying to bring credit to a maligned and abused great-grandfather, and that a relative even more recent is a murderer.
Of course, it all happened so long ago, I don't know how John's going to take it.
Can we not tell him right away, Sergeant? If someone's got to tell him, I'd like it to be me.
What about the hatchet?
I sure don't want it. And I don't think John does either.
Well, could you get him to donate it to our crime museum? Maybe there'll be somebody who wants to write a really long, detailed story about Lizzie Borden and her times, New England in the 1890s. And the hatchet would be an important part of it. Writers like to see those things for themselves.
Who knows? Perhaps that writer will be John himself. He's made an awfully good start.
Do bear in mind John Howard's version of what took place in Fall River, Massachusetts, the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of August, 1892, is his personal theory. He never claimed it to be fact, nor do we. But his views were interesting enough for us to call them to the attention of you specialists in felony and transgressions, you listeners to the Mystery Theater. I shall return shortly.
A healthy investment in yourself.
Goodyear announces hard-driving deals on hard-driving tires. The Goodyear Tracker LT for your pickup, van, or camper. Get Goodyear Tracker LT tires on sale now for just $55 plus $311 FET in size G78 by 15, load range C. No trade needed. The Tracker LT with dependable bias ply construction. Long-wearing tread with cuffs and rubber and triple-tempered nylon cord. Get a hard-driving deal at Goodyear now. Sale ends Saturday.
And now, as if his entire career was planned for this one moment, Sidney Sheldon has written the year's biggest book, the number one bestseller, Rage of Angels.
On September 4th, 1969, just out of law school, Jennifer Parker was sworn in on the staff of the Manhattan District Attorney at exactly 8:20 a.m.
You saw me swear to
her dream had come true. But by 12:30 p.m., that dream was shattered.
I want that woman arrested.
The plot begins. Rage of Angels.
The frame.
The disgrace.
The pain.
The comeback.
The victories.
The affair. The illegitimate child.
The kidnapping.
The threat.
The mafia.
The mental breakdown.
The
comeback.
The investigation.
The crackdown. The climax. Torn between her love for two men as far apart as good and evil, Jennifer is Sidney Sheldon's best creation yet. Rage of Angels.
Jennifer Parker is an incredible woman.
Rage of Angels. The master storyteller at his masterful best. Rage of Angels. A national bestseller for more than 8 months. Now, finally, in paperback from Warner Books.
So, in his search to clear his family name, our writer has rattled an unsuspected skeleton in his family's closet. We can't help observing. This often is the fate of man's actions. In uncovering one truth, one comes upon another truth that was best left hidden. For what the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Our cast included Roberta Maxwell, Jada Rowland, Robert Dryden, and Russell Horton. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall, inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
That's right, Hyman Brown, another classic directed tale. From CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Wow, that's full one... evening tonight. Full evening with Lizzie tonight.
Yep. Full evening.
Surprise! Eerie House Radio proudly presents yet another Gar's Moral of the Story.
A sharpened blade cuts in twice the time. There you go.
Wow. Short and sweet. Tomorrow
short
night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, we got one more axe to grind. That's right, an episode of Johnny Dollar, the Hatchet House Theft Matter, and the Whistler. The Whistler. The Killers. Yep.
Killers.
So more chop, chop, chop them up. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the Axe's fault.
Yeah.
I was looking it up because in that last part it said the Perfect Sleeper commercial was Susan Anton. Man, I hadn't thought about Susan Anton. The woman is 70 years old.
Wow. Time flies.
Not necessarily. Yeah, October 12th.
Yeah, we're not that far. We're not that far from that either.
No, we're not.
Not that far at all. But far enough away where we got a whole lot of radio coming up, including those shows tomorrow, and then right afterwards at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Horrible Horror, starring me, Guy the Ghoul. That guy.
Yep.
On Twitch. And
Twitch,
go to
Twitch.
Facebook and figure it out. There you go, Facebook.
Wasn't that
Horrible Horror starring Guy the Ghoul?
The
group.
Wasn't Twitch a dance in Bedrock? Twitch.
Oh, yeah, the Bedrock.
Either
rock,
that or the Jetsons.
The Bedrock twist, wasn't it?
Something like that, yeah, with Roll, I think, was the...
Or and Marg Rock or something like that, you know.
Well,
yes.
Remember, Dale, that the Jetsons also had a one-word song type thing. Maybe it was out of the Jetsons.
No, I'm thinking Flintstones. Got to be Flintstones. We will study the matter and report to you in great detail, I'm sure.
Yeah, do that. Do that. You
because
tell
cartoons,
me.
Because cartoons matter.
They do.
Cartoons do matter.
That's
so
right.
Do axe murders. We'll get more chop 'em ups tomorrow.
Fogsbane is going to his own wedding, funeral, death march. Where is he going? Somewhere.
No, he's going to attend the wedding. He's not going to his wedding.
He's already been
there and done that. So, you know.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Well, you be safe there, Fogs. Stay
That's
away
right.
from any funeral dirges. I don't know what you got going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep your head low if it's a shotgun wedding.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And stay away from any axes.
Yes.
That's right. That's the one thing
Definitely
we all need to do.
Keep your head low. Hey, all right, folks.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Dim.
There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Everything but the puff.
Everything
but the puff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, it's not good to puff these days, you know. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So which theory did you like best, guys, on who did it? Who done it?
I don't know.
You
I would have to
it,
actually read there is from the historical record more than I have.
Yeah, right.
To make a call. I reserve judgment.
I just think it's interesting that if that the wife was kind of messing around with a painter and the hubby didn't like it and I could see him killing her, painter coming around finding the guy and finding her and then since she killed her, then the guy killed the painter killed the father, then walked out the side door.
Well, okay. Now, since King Henry VIII...
Was there a bloody
divorced,
glove? Just curious. If
Was there what?
Was there a bloody glove? You know, if it doesn't fit, you must
well,
have quit.
You know what? That's the funny thing. There wasn't really any blood or blood splattered around, you know, that the police found on anyone or anything. You know, the only blood that was found was right at the... Right at the killing sites. A lot of blood there and no blood splatters anywhere else. And not on anyone else. And he, being a super cheap guy, didn't have a downstairs indoor plumbing.
Yeah, they had no indoor plumbing. They were august in the fact that...
Yeah, they were not.
He was cheap.
He was cheap. It wasn't that he couldn't afford it. He just didn't... He didn't want to pay for it.
Cheap.
Yeah.
Cheap.
Yeah. Well, now that expands my thinking to maybe Dexter did it. no blood
That's
splatter.
Right. Dexter.
No.
Dexter knew how to keep that splatter from showing up everywhere, didn't he?
Oh, that Dexter. Okay, I had to catch up to you guys.
Oh, Dale, that show's coming back.
Yeah, all right.
You didn't like... Wait. You're into all
Dexter's?
This horror stuff, and Dexter's too much?
No,
I got
not
into
too
Dexter.
Much.
It took
just,
me a while.
I watched a little, and I'm like, okay.
It gets better. It got better. It got more intriguing. Like, they're going to catch this guy. They're going to catch it. And the rub that the guy that's killing all these people is working as, like, under the same roof as the police.
He's getting these people that couldn't be gotten any other that were guilty of sin.
Yeah.
And that's why he called it, whenever he was doing that, he called it just taking out the trash.
Yeah. Well, the goof on that was his father, a cop, I think, his adopted father, a cop, recognized
adopted
he was a
father.
Homicidal maniac and said, we just need to funnel you in the right direction so that you kill... But you kill the right people.
Yeah, put that homicidal tendencies to good use. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, which is, you know, I mean, There's some genius
in
there, Dale.
That whole concept of killing the right people seems awful subjective.
Well, you know. You just hope you're not on that list.
Do you remember
right
the third grade when you called me a fatty in third grade?
Yeah, there you
yes.
go.
Yes, well, guess
and nothing's
what?
Changed, pal. Wah!
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That'd be the wrong thing to say.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, Dexter had murder rooms. He not only did he know he was going to kill you, he set up a place so that he could clean it up and get rid of all the evidence and get rid of your body somewhere in the Keys, in the water. So, I don't know. The fact that the housekeeper didn't hear anything, didn't lock the doors, didn't nothing, you know. So you got two people, Lizzie Borden and the
maid.
And the maid was never considered. I don't understand why the maid never was. I guess because
she didn't
have a motive, I guess, is what they were thinking.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily seeing the motive for Lizzie Borden either. You know, bad blood with a, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, according to that one of CBS 48 Hours I'm viewing, basically that mother-in-law or stepmother, I'm sorry, stepmother, may have been one of the nicest people in the house. So,
according to some.
According
not
to
Lizzie.
Some.
Not Lizzie.
No, not to Lizzie.
Reports say.
Mm-hmm. You know. I mean, yes, she can't defend herself, but then again, you know, who's to say that Lizzie's speaking ill of the dead? You know, I don't know. Why is it that the housekeeper, this is almost the 1900s, why the housekeeper is like, okay, I'm done. I'm going back to where? Ireland or Scotland or wherever she came from. Not just going to find other employment. I'm leaving the country.
Yeah. Y'all
okay,
crazy
sure.
over here. I'm going
back
home.
Yeah. Y'all a little bit crazy. I got to go.
That's right.
That was a little, yeah. Now, one of the things, and this is like on the monster kid side, is as we grew up, Lizzie Borden was part of the monster history we had.
To a point, yeah, I think so.
I think she was included, and I guess
I don't know.
If you were
I wonder if American Horror Story ever stuck her. I think in one of the seasons they had all the, but I think they were mostly male killers in history.
Okay.
They had like the Menendez brothers and John Wayne Gacy.
Was that the one where they were all in the same motel-hotel thing and they were showing
it
up?
It might have been the hotel one, and they were all
yeah.
there for a dinner
yeah.
or something. It
yeah.
was it was really weird.
That series actually...
Jeffrey Dahmer was
I,
there? How nice. I wonder what he
yeah,
was eating.
I tried to eat Pringles. He was eating yeah. Pringles. It was in a can. They were in his refrigerator. I don't know.
in a jar.
In a jar, yeah.
Pickles.
Yeah. He was in himself. He was a home pickler. Okay, you know what's
yes.
wrong with that? Yeah. That horror story thing was almost
yeah.
too graphic for Alice. Kind of like.
It's
I
rough.
Could watch
it
Dexter.
Is rough. The language is rough.
Yeah, language is rough.
A bit
yeah.
of adult themes and
a
scenes.
Whole lot. Yeah, they're just everywhere. Just all over the place. Now,
but there
now,
are,
I could, I
there
could,
are parts of it I like outside of that. Some of it's written well. Some of the horror is actually horror, which is refreshing. It's more than a gore fest, you know what I mean? There is tension. There is suspense. There is, something more than just, all right, guts and spleens.
I'm not a guts and spleens. No,
that'd be yeah, horror I know is that. Different than slash. Horror is yeah. different than slash. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it,
true
you can,
horror, I think, is more far more psychological.
Yes. You know.
Which is why you don't need
yeah.
the graphic horror.
Right.
You
right.
do it by
right.
shadow, by music, by atmosphere.
Yeah.
Man.
And hand puppets. Hand puppets.
And hand puppets. Hand puppets are good.
Hand puppets and a flashlight, and you're set. Yeah, so Lizzie Borden, and again, I don't know what a modern horror kid would be, but Lizzie was part of
you
the monsters.
On, you haven't been in social media for a while.
No.
You can see the horror.
And I'm not very deep on social media as these other people get into, I guess. Yeah, I'm kind of surface and telling lame jokes about Chewbacca and stuff. Yeah.
I know. Don't pick on Chewie. Chewie is good boy.
What about
good guy.
What about chewing? What about chewing tobacco?
I tried it. It didn't make me feel good, so I didn't continue.
It's the worst thing. Like actual plug tobacco. I tried it exactly once.
Uh-huh.
I hurled.
Yeah.
It's foul. It is foul.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Some people
well
like it. I don't know.
Pick something out of the field like Mr. Hankey and put that in your mouth. Oh, I just plug tobacco is
yeah.
the worst thing ever.
Well, yeah,
it's up there with lima beans.
Hey, I like lima beans.
I like lima beans. You're two against one here. I don't have anything against lima beans.
I'm out beaned.
Yeah, I guess. But, yeah, so getting back to that we had, like, okay, another thing that's odd for a monster kid, but it's in there, is, of course, Jack the Ripper.
Oh, yeah.
So Jack the Ripper and Lizzie Borden are going to be on the short list for your 1950, 1960, 1970 monster kid, along with Frankenstein, the Mummy, and you know whatever else.
Yeah. I mean, they're different because they were real stories. But they fit right in with horror because the recreations of them or storytelling of them have so
exactly.
many good elements of horror. Yeah.
Exactly. And embellishments. That's the big thing, is there was so much embellished about those that they were made so they were not real. Like if you actually walked up to me as a 10-year-old, me being a 10-year-old, and you said, was Lizzie Borden a real person, I would have said, no, she's made up, right? You know, I don't know.
Nah,
you know, Jack the Ripper. Never caught him, never saw him, nobody ever, nothing. Not a fingerprint, not a hoof print, nothing.
I've heard so many crazy theories. In fact, some have even suggested H.H. Holmes, great serial, not great, but prolific, I should say, serial killer, H.H. Holmes, that they thought it was suspicious that right when Holmes started showing up in Chicago, doing what he was doing, posing as a doctor, that's right around when the Ripper quit.
Yeah, and there's been there, right.
So, I mean, and it's crazy, I think. I mean, who knows? There could be something to it, but it just seems an out there kind of a theory to me.
Now, was the guy that you just mentioned, the doctor or whatever, was that the guy that bought up real estate for a whole block and turned it into a murder house?
Yes, in Chicago, yeah.
They called it the horror house or something like that?
Yeah, he had, like, rooms with torture and all kinds of...
That was so crazy.
He was like
was
a
so
perfect
crazy.
Stalker. He knew how to single out the people that were, you know, lonely, not too much family, nobody that's going to notice a whole lot that they're missing for a while, and did his thing, which was unpleasant.
Yeah. Which involved insurance. Insurance. It was an insurance.
Yes. A lot of it was money. Yeah.
It was an insurance scam. Now that in and of itself sounds more like something you would see in a horror comic book than would actually be real, but it was real, you know.
Yeah,
it was real. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. The extremity of some of these things do seem, you know, like beyond the realm of possibility, but clearly not. Ugh.
Jack the Ripper's more like a ghost than he is a real person.
Because they never caught him. I think that's
exactly
that's part of the allure. Yeah.
And if you think about the freak amount, the freak zone of this Lizzie Borden thing, somebody went in, somebody was in there or went in there, chopped up people and got out. Well, it's almost like a ghost. It's almost like, you know,
yeah.
It fits more like a ghost story than
you got to admire
you know,
the guy's skill at this point.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, it was shoof, shoof, shoof.
Yep.
You know, he was kind of shushing the people not to scream. I strike you with the X, don't say a word, you know.
As early as 1955, there was an episode of Playbill in which Ruth Springford played Lizzie in a television play. Lizzie Borden took an X. Wow.
Wow. Wow. That was the one thing.
Also on
me.
Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Older Sister, with John Loring as Emma and Hitchcock's daughter, Pat, as the servant Margaret.
Uh-huh.
Margaret, yeah.
That is so crazy. Yeah, I did recently, within the last 5 years, revisit and watch the Elizabeth Montgomery version.
I would like to. I've seen it like twice, I think, so it's pretty fresh on my mind, some of the details of it, but I'd like to rewatch it again.
One thing that's kind of fun, again, monster kid type fun, is some of the made-for-television 1970 movies. Kind of fun.
Yes.
I mean, they had some that were westerns, but they had some that were horror related.
Do you have any favorites that come to mind?
Yes, Crowhaven Farm.
I don't remember that one.
Crowhaven Farm was about the lady that was Mrs. Muir, Jessica Lange? No, Lange. No,
Hope Lange.
Goes to this farm she's never been at, but she inherited or something like that, and she finds out she's a witch, and they kill her, and she gets possessed by the spirit of a witch that's there, or something like that.
Here, and I think Dave brought this up earlier, according to Wikipedia, ABC commissioned The Legend of Lizzie Borden in 1975 with Elizabeth Montgomery as Lizzie Borden. It was later discovered after Montgomery died, because she did die young, that she and Borden
related.
Were, in fact, six cousins once removed, both descending from 17th century Massachusetts residents, John Luther.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, that was Gar that mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, Gar mentioned it.
I'm sorry.
I blamed you.
That's okay. No, that's okay.
And the genealogist who documented the connection said, I wonder how Elizabeth would have felt
after
she
died.
Knew she was playing her own cousin.
Yeah. Would that have been weird or what? She didn't know at the time. They didn't know this until after she passed. Yeah, isn't that weird? I'm like freaking crazy.
Yep.
But then to have Agnes Moorehead portray her, and then Elizabeth Montgomery portray her, and then all Elizabeth Montgomery and Agnes Moorehead in the same TV show together,
yep.
You know, that rope gets tighter and tighter.
Creepy, eerie even.
Yeah, eerie even. So it's kind of neat that I think this is it. This is it. Because they became legend, they moved beyond history, and so your monster kid is going to move more towards the legend of them than the history of them. And that's where your Jack the Ripper and Lizzie Borden turn into monsters, you know.
Dave, now I know this was Dave. Earlier you brought up classic murder case of Sam Shepard. Was that the one, Dave, where he was found guilty, then he was, no, and then they released him, and then, he still did it.
But he wasn't convicted. In the second trial, he was not convicted.
Okay.
But he wasn't pronounced innocent, and so everybody believed him still believed him to be due. So that's the thing is, even if you're put on trial and you didn't do it, you're still going to be, in most people's minds, guilty.
Yeah.
Okay, but, Dave, I got a question. So is there a thing in law, because I don't know this, is why I ask. Is there a thing in law where you go to court and you tell your lawyer, okay, I don't care what the verdict is, but if the verdict goes in my way, you have to get them to say I'm innocent, period, and proclamate it or something.
Well, no, I think you have to have a separate trial for that. And it usually comes in the case where somebody has been wrongly convicted and spent time in prison, usually years, then you can have a trial to become vindicated, which means you need to be claimed innocent. And regular trials, they only are for guilty or not guilty. And not guilty is not innocent.
What would help is at catching the actual murderer. What I mean? To get that ghost, that weight off of you that you were the prime suspect in everybody's mind, I think the only way out of that, really, to come out clean is unequivocally find the murderer and say, this is who did it, and this person could not have done it because that person did it.
That's the only way to get it out of people's minds, I think. You're right.
Yeah.
Just to be a hateful person. What I would do is I would go to court. Go ahead, face the thing, get vindicated. So it's like you're not guilty. Okay. Then go to the next trial and go, you make me innocent, and they say you're innocent. And then after it's all said and done, come and go, I had a hand in it, but I'm innocent.
I think the only way you can get one of those innocent verdicts is if you've been wrongly convicted. They don't like to go that because then it costs the state money.
It makes that particular justice system look a little shaky too.
Right, and that's why prosecutors who never had anything to do with the verdict will say, no, we don't believe that they should be released or that they're innocent, even though somebody else who had done several other things like that went ahead and confessed to actually having done it and gave details on it. They still don't want it retried because it makes the justice system look corrupt, like they didn't care, like they didn't look or things like that. All that goes in there together to make that look that way, I think.
If it was broken down into sheer terms of 50-50 against and for, nobody's going to be happy. The justice system's always going to be 50% in the wrong or 50% in the right, depending on your perspective. So, yeah.
Well, 50% is half either way.
Can't win an election on half, though, can you? I don't know.
No comment.
Hello. Oh, whole bag of worms. All right. Anyway.
I'd like to continue broadcasting.
There you go. So anyway, this whole thing is just really legendary in that it's just an amazing story that has so many questions that will never, like Jack the Ripper, never ever be answered. They'd have to make a time machine to catch Jack.
There could not possibly be discovered any evidence that would be so credible that they would just close the book on it at this point.
Right.
For cases that old, I think.
And a bigger goof on this is the CBS Radio Mystery Theater date was 1981. Unfortunately, by 1981, I was no longer listening to the CBS Radio Mystery Theater when it aired. So, I can go back now and listen to it, and it's amazing.
Right.
But I had stopped, like, right around 1979, I had stopped due to a change in demographic and all this other stuff. So take 1981 ability to check stuff out and then go, yeah, I found this hatchet head. Test it for blood. I don't know if you could go back to the 1890s with a hatchet head and go, yeah, let's test it. I don't know if the evidence would still be there. It's biodegradable evidence on metal. I don't know.
What they could do, I mean, and forensics, at least if television isn't a complete lie, which of course it couldn't be if it's on TV. No,
it couldn't
say
if it were lying.
It would be conceivable. You could take the old crime photos, kind of determine their actual size, and match up a weapon to the type of injuries, because there's extensive pictures of the skulls, you know, from I don't know if they clean the skulls off or whatever. I don't know. From what they found,
the mess
they found.
The TV show Bones. They found out everything from the bones.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you can do that now, but to go back would be extremely difficult.
Yeah, to go back to 1890 something and get information and evidence from then and bring it up now and test it, I don't know. There's been stuff about the body of Hitler and you know, they're testing stuff and is this really him or is this just, you know, just a loose arm that someone found and it's Hitler. You know, I don't know. You know, there were a whole lot of arms.
I don't know.
The
story with him is
ground.
Supposedly after he saw what happened to Mussolini, he's like, yeah, this ain't happening to me.
Yeah, and he ended up.
We're croaking ourselves, and you guys are burning the bodies, man. Because
That's why he took this. That's why he took the submarine to Bolivia.
Yeah,
that too.
Yeah, it was all.
Well, he did that
after.
Yep.
He did that after he shot himself, and they burned him up. Okay.
Well, it was right after him. And Disney, you know, share. Immortality is animatronics in Disney World underneath, you know. Disney on Ice really is Disney on Ice.
Maybe they're in a club with like people like Elvis Presley and what's his name, Jim Morrison, people that we have a hard time accepting some of us have a hard time accepting are dead.
Gandhi. I don't know.
You know what
Lizzie
you know what
Gordon.
I'm referencing there? Either of you ever see the movie Death Becomes Her?
I did not.
Was that Bruce Willis and...
Oh, my gosh. Is that a fun movie?
With Goldie Hawn and Meryl Streep, I think.
Yes, that's exactly who.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were immortal, but don't get injured, I think, was the...
Right, and they wind up, they go one. To this party. It's a club of people that have this secret of immortality, and they run into like Elvis and.
Oh, okay. I didn't remember that part.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
There's a bunch of people that you know disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Lizzie Borden should have been there. Yeah.
Well, no.
Jack the Ripper should have been there.
No, but but you could have had like Amelia Earhart, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
She was never found.
That's true. She was never found.
Not a crime story that we know of, but still a great mystery.
I think every one of those should have a Bigfoot in them.
You know what? Wouldn't it be funny if it did?
Well, I'll never know. I'm never going to be
all
there.
Of them were related to Bigfoot.
All of them are related to Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Lizzie Borden, second to second to second to second's cousin was Bigfoot.
Yes.
Yeah. I can deal with it.
No one knew that Elizabeth Montgomery had huge feet. Huge hairy feet.
What? Oh, okay.
Yes. Well, she was related to Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everything, it's Bigfoot. Bigfoot
it's
took
crazy.
A plane from Amelia Earhart. Let's see, what else? What else did Bigfoot do? Posed as Tokyo Rose? I don't know.
Okay.
One thing that's kind of crazy about Elizabeth Montgomery was she first starred in Bewitched 1964, and she was 31 years old, and she looks like she's 19 or 20.
Yeah.
in the black and white, the first, you know, few.
Oh, yeah.
She looks like she's like 20 years old. She's 31 years old. Crazy. And they started Bewitched actually started on, to date myself, the year of my boit. I hatched that year. So.
Oh gosh, I remember watching the first run of those.
Oh.
On TV.
Of what? Of what's that?
Bewitched.
Bewitched.
Oh, Bewitched.
I saw it.
Yeah, I remember the second season when it came out in color. They had all these promos for it being in color, and we still had a black and white TV, so it didn't help a whole lot.
Yeah.
It didn't show color.
Yeah.
I think a lot of shows flipped right around 65, 66, 67.
Yep. That Batman from color. Lost in Space color.
Wasn't Batman always in color?
Batman was always in color. Lost in Space started in black and white, went to color.
Yeah. First season boat was black and white.
Yeah, Voyage to the Bottom Sea did that too.
Wild West started in black and white, went to color.
So did I Dream of Jeannie.
Yeah,
there you go.
And Gilligan's
Beverly
Island.
Gilligan's Island, Beverly Hillbillies.
Beverly Hillbillies.
Now, see, Bewitched occurred and stayed on television long enough so I was old enough to remember first run Bewitched, but like seasons 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever.
Like you remember Tabitha.
Yeah.
She came later.
She came later.
Yep.
Yeah, so did Adam, the second kid. But I remember.
I loved all the uncles and cousins. Like, you know, of course, that was a vehicle for Paul Lynde to get in there. And
Paul Lynde.
Yeah.
Oh, who was the father? He was a distinguished guy.
He was. Uncle Arthur and their father and Aunt Clara.
And
her cousin.
A whole bunch of
aunts. And her cousin.
All the cousins.
No, the one that was her. With the dark hair.
Serena.
Serena, yeah.
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 Sabrina and Serena, yeah.
Yeah, that was
identical cousins, and you'll find.
Uh-huh, yeah.
One's blonde and one's brunette. Da-da-da-da-da. Having them both is better yet. Oh, wait, no.
Uh-huh. And the weird thing about Serena, whatever her name was, she had a face tattoo of a heart on her face.
Oh, yeah, she did.
Probably
maybe that was one episode where she was trying to be groovy, man.
She was groovy the whole time.
She was.
Every one of these shows had a hippie show. Like, I remember the Space Hippies on Lost in Space.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I forgot about that, yeah.
That was dreadful.
It was.
I think even Star Trek had an episode with
some kids.
Thing.
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Blech.
It was.
Not going to beat out Dr. Smith with a long hair wig on.
Oh, my God. That was bad.
I was never a fan of Dr. Smith. I don't know. So, well, anyway, I'm gonna wish you guys fun with more Lizzie Borden tomorrow. And I'm going to call it a night.
Yep, time for to put Dale on dog duty and to bring in somebody else's duty. We'll close out the show. Mr. Jimmy Durante, have a good show tomorrow, Gar.
All right. Yeah, hope to see you later, baby.
Bye-bye.
Good night and break a leg.
Good night.
Go.
What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
Go to sleep.
I tell you, she's a ghost.
Go on. Ghosts, spooks, skeletons, chit stuff. There are no such things as ghosts.